Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Psychics can see the color of time. It's blue.
Okay. So, I'd kind of love to know what that one's from.
What it's from? Some research. I'll tell you after the show if you remind me.
All right.
I always say that I'll tell you, and I never tell you because I always forget by the time we're done recording.
Tell me what?
There's the trivia for you, folks. So today we thought we would look at something. Actually, it was Chris's suggestion that we look into this particular topic, which was the topic of image sensors and what they do and what the two main types of image sensors, how they are different from one another. And I thought it was a great idea. It's also a fairly complex topic. We do have an article on HowStuffWorks.com that says, what is the difference between CCD and CMOS image sensors in a digital camera? And that's really what we're going to be talking about here. So that there is an article on the site, and it's a nice short article if you want a quick overview. But we're going to go into some detail a little bit in this podcast. And really, the first thing you need to know is that an image sensor it's taking the place of film, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, a long, long time ago in a galaxy that happens to be right here where we're sitting, we did a podcast on the megapixel myth. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people equate numbers with a way with quality. And they say, oh, well, I've got a 12 megapixel camera. That's obviously better than that 6 megapixel camera I used to own. Well, it depends on what you're doing with the photo.
And it also depends on, again, the other qualities of that camera.
Right. And image sensors have a lot more to do with the quality of the photo. But in a way, it really depends because, again, there's this idea that there are two different kinds. Which kind is better? It depends on what you're doing with that. What are you taking photos of? As it turns out, they're not really better than one another. Inherently, they're better than one another for specific applications of the photographic technology.
And the quality of the two sensors mm-hmm. is constantly getting closer and closer, so that the things that one sensor does better than the other start to become less distinct over time, because the technology is improving on both sides simultaneously. Now, if we were to go back a little bit to the early days of digital cameras, the distinction was clear. You know, you would say that, well, a professional photographer would more likely have a CCD image sensor in his or her camera.
Yeah, CCD and, meaning charge-coupled device.
Yes, charge-coupled device. That's one of the two types.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who has, say, a relatively inexpensive, of course, back in the early days of digital cameras, that was definitely relative.
Only $8 billion.
Yeah, only $1,000.
A princely sum.
Yes, a princely, going back to that, $1,000 as opposed to, say, $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
But a person holding one of those cameras might have a CMOS, or a complementary metal oxide semiconductor image sensor.
Yes, they come up and say, that's a wonderful shirt you're wearing today.
That's such a great picture you've taken.
Have you lost weight?
No, it's not that kind of complimentary. I have a whole joke about that, but I'm going to spare everybody because we've already said the punchline.
Okay.
Anyway, these are the two different sensors, and they do go about capturing data a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go into the basic way a camera captures an image. I'm going to talk about still camera here.
Okay. All right? So we're talking about cameras in general, not
yes.
necessarily film or digital?
Right.
Okay.
So in general, what happens is you've got a camera and you're pointing it at something that you want to take a photo of.
Mm-hmm.
Light is coming toward you. It's reflecting off of the subject of your photo.
Right.
If light were not reflecting off the subject of your photo, it would either mean you were in total darkness, in which case taking a photo is not very helpful, or you're taking a picture of a black hole.
Okay.
Because not even light can escape it. That being said, they're actually looking at making a physical picture of a black hole using radio telescopes, which is so cool. That's a tangent. Anyway, so light is coming from the subject.
I think he was drooling a little bit.
It is awesome. We should do a full podcast just on that.
Okay.
But anyway, light's coming from the subject toward the camera. And the light passes through the lens. The purpose of the lens is to focus that light mm-hmm. toward a specific point within the camera. It moves through the aperture, which is the opening behind the lens that allows light to pass through. There's a shutter that's there behind the aperture, which actually directs the light up toward the viewfinder for the old style cameras, you know, ones that don't have the, you know, you're not looking at a screen
mm-hmm.
on the back. You're looking actually through a viewfinder. Well, that light gets directed up by a mirror
mm-hmm.
that's essentially attached to the shutter that makes the light go up inside the camera. Then it hits a prism, which inverts the light because you may not know this, but the light, the image that's coming in that's hitting the sensor is actually upside down from our perspective.
Gasp.
So if you didn't have that prism there, the subject you're looking at would be upside down. It would be like everything you're taking photos of was in Australia.
I knew that was coming.
Unless you're Australian, in which case it's all in Detroit. So that's if you're wondering why there's all these giant car factories in Australia, it's just because you didn't have
your
that prism
broken?
In there. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a terrible joke. But no, the prism does invert the light.
Okay.
So otherwise, again, upside down. So when you press the button to capture an image.
Yeah, the shutter.
The shutter release, exactly. The shutter moves out of the way, and instead of the light hitting that mirror and going up to the prism and inverting, the light hits either film in a film camera
mm-hmm.
or an image sensor in a digital camera.
Right.
So really the shutter just moves out of the way, and then the light hits the sensor, and then you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different with the digital cameras that are out right now, but that's in general how the process works.
The basics.
Yeah. Now, with cameras now, light may be hitting the sensor constantly, and the shutter itself is not a physical shutter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way that the sensor captures data, and we'll talk about that when we get to that point. There are two different major types of shutters that we can talk about. So that's the general process. Now, with film, it's a chemical process. Light hits the film, and then some chemical reactions take place, and that's what allows you to capture an image.
Right.
With image sensors, it's not chemical.
No.
It's electrical.
Right. You're converting light energy into an electronic signal.
Yes.
Which and then you're going to want to store to some medium.
Yes.
Typically some kind of flash memory device.
Yes.
Depending on what kind of camera you have. You know, there were some, I think, that stored on CD. So, you know, your mileage may vary, but in general, some sort of flash device on today's cameras.
Yeah, the old digital camcorders could record on different kinds of media.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and digital camcorders are working under the same general principles as digital still cameras.
Yes.
With some, other differences, but we'll talk about
that.
I said. So now we get into the differences between the two major types of sensors, the charge-coupled device and the complementary metal oxide semiconductor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to go do CCD and CMOS from here on out, I think.
Okay, no problem.
Because otherwise I'm just going to have tongue twisters for the rest of the podcast.
Yes, well, I just wanted to make sure that people knew what it stood for.
Obviously, very important. So in a CCD sensor, every single pixel, remember, is a point of light.
Right.
An image is made up of pixels, millions of pixels.
Right.
That's where the megapixel comes from, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a 12 megapixel camera is going to take 12 megapixels worth of pixels within the dimensions of that image.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas an 8 megapixel camera will use fewer pixels for that same size.
Right.
But and that's where our idea about resolution comes in. Sometimes you hear people talk about a low-resolution image. It may be that it's got fewer pixels in that image so that you can actually start seeing, if the pixels are large enough and few enough, you can start seeing the borders from one pixel to the next. It's not very smooth. It's almost jagged.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the benefit of having a high-megapixel camera. If you shoot it high quality, then you are capturing more pixels for a specific region of the image, and you can render that photo in a larger format.
Yes.
Because when you shrink it, when you compress the size of a photo and reduce it in size, the computer is able to throw out unnecessary information, and that the image still is pretty good looking.
Mm-hmm.
When you try to increase the size, the computer has to sort of guess on pixel by pixel basis. Well, I mean, this color is sort of a brown color. It looks like I could throw something else in here similar. And that's why when you increase the size of a photo, a digital photo, that it starts to look kind of jaggedy and rough, because the computer is having to guess at what that information is. So if you take a 10 megapixel photo and shrink it down, it's going to look pretty good. But if you try to take a 2 megapixel photo and blow it up, it's not going to be so pretty.
Yeah, if you think about it like a puzzle, let's say that you have a puzzle that has 4 pieces to it. Well, then you're going to be able to see the division of those 4 pieces very clearly.
Yes.
If it has 4 million pieces, then each of those pieces are individually much tinier than those 4 giant ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other issue, is that the larger you blow something up, if it doesn't have enough pixels in it, not megapixels, but enough pixels, then you're going to start to notice. But that being said, the general digital cameras that are out there for the consumer market and the general way the consumers use digital cameras, megapixels really don't matter, because most of us are not blowing images up to poster size.
Right.
Most of us are using them for online photo albums. We might print a few out, but usually 8 by 10 tends to be about the largest, because most people don't have printers capable of printing at a larger size.
Yeah, and when you take it to somebody to have it printed, it's kind of expensive.
Yeah,
a poster.
Most of us don't do that, so most of us don't need to worry about megapixels at this point. Professional photographers, it's a different story.
Sure.
So CCD sensor, each of those pixels has a charge. The photons that are coming in and hitting that image sensor are being transferred from a light energy from photons into electrons. They have there's an output node with a CCD sensor where that is converted into a voltage. It's buffered and then sent to a different part of the camera so that it will become an analog signal.
Right.
So a CCD sensor, it's a very specific device that doesn't have a lot of other functionality to it apart from the fact that it's taking in light and converting it into voltage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Pixel is completely devoted to capturing light, and it has a very uniform output. So that's sort of where the idea of CCD being high quality came from. It was very good at capturing the true essence of whatever it is you're pointing your camera at. You don't mm-hmm. have to have a you don't have to worry about low lighting effects, that kind of stuff, or having an image turn out too grainy if the light is too low, which can happen with CMOS images, particularly from a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's depending on where the manufacturer for your camera got the CMOS sensor, you might not have as big an issue taking low lighting images. But if you've ever used a digital camera in either a dark or just a dim environment, and you look and you're like, this just doesn't look good. Now, when I take a photo outside in the middle of the daytime, it looks gorgeous, beautiful colors, very, very distinct. That's part of the problem, is that the CMOS sensor captures it in a different way. In that case, every single pixel has its own charge to voltage conversion. The CCD, it's doing all of the pixels at once. In CMOS, it's doing each pixel individually.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sensor itself has other elements added to it that the CCD sensor does not have. Yeah. Remember we said CCD kind of offloads the information once it's been converted into electrical impulses mm-hmm. to other chips.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, those elements are actually on a CMOS sensor.
Yeah.
So it's got amplifiers, it's got digitization circuits, so it's actually converting the electricity into bits
yes.
on the sensor mm-hmm. itself. It's got noise reduction capabilities. And so that means that it actually speeds up the process and mm-hmm. it decreases the amount of space you need within a camera, because all of those elements are found on a single chip as opposed to having dedicated chips for these specific functions.
Yep. Unfortunately, also reduces the amount of space it has for image capture because all that stuff is on the same chip.
Yes.
So that's a downside of it.
Yes. So that was one of the arguments, again, early on, was that CCD cameras could take sharper photos than CMOS cameras. And that, it was almost, there was also an expense issue, right? CCD image sensors tend to be more expensive
mm-hmm.
than CMOS ones. CMOS, the process of manufacturer got so efficient that the price started to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why those are the sort of image sensors that you find in things like smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
Smartphones that have cameras tend to have CMOS sensors in them. They take up less space. They put out less heat. They take less energy to run. And they're very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all the qualities that people who are having who want something in a nice slim form factor that's what's important to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, a CCD image sensor might take a sharper quality photo in certain situations, but it's also going to require a larger form factor, and it does take more energy to run.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy is going to also mean more heat.
Yes.
Because as we know, as electricity runs through a circuit, one of the byproducts is heat.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't figured out a way to get around that yet.
It's just one of those realities that it's basically, it's inefficient enough where some of the energy is being converted to heat energy instead of, what it is intended for.
Right.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
So now
we've got down to the idea of these two different image sensors capturing information in different ways, and the fact that over time, both types of sensors have developed to the point where the differences between the two, apart from the fundamental difference about how they collect information, have started to diminish.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that you can find some professional cameras out there now that use CMOS image sensors, whereas, you know, a few years ago, that was really unheard of.
Right.
And you can also find some consumer cameras, especially in the camcorder realm, that are using CCD image sensors, which again, for a while, you just didn't hear about because CCD cameras were so expensive. It was pretty much reserved for professionals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just consumers just didn't necessarily have the money to drop on something like that unless they were, you know, one percenters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's still a developing thing, and we're still seeing that kind of level out.
Mm-hmm.
But the two technologies do still exist. They coexist. So it's not like one has been abandoned on top of, in favor of the other. Although that tends to, there's usually someone predicting that every few years.
Well, sure. A lot of the research that I did for the podcast was from Teledyne DALSA, which makes both types of sensors. And they had some really interesting comparative white papers and other information if you're interested in getting into the depths of it. Some of it got fairly complicated. But basically, they had one paper that said that that image sensors can be measured on basically eight different characteristics. And these were responsivity, you know, basically how responsive the sensor is, its dynamic range, uniformity, shuttering, speed, windowing, and anti-blooming. And, you know, again, this is kind of, complex, but it's kind of funny because the way that the image sensor captures information, depending on the type that you're talking about, they're not really, it's really application specific. Some of them really don't have that much difference over the others. Like, for example, CMOS chips are known to be a little bit more responsive. But CCDs have an advantage in dynamic range. But basically, they didn't say, this one chip is better than the others. They said it has more to do with the manufacturing capability and whether the chip is done right and is used in the correct setting than it does, for a particular type of technology.
Right. And you were mentioning the fact that there are different shutters. In general, a CMOS image sensor uses a rolling shutter.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing saying that it couldn't use the same sort of shutter that a CCD image sensor does, which is mm-hmm. a global shutter. There's nothing saying that it couldn't. It's just that all the camcorders I looked at specifically, this really plays more into video than still photography, although there's some crossover between the two. It said that you could have a CMOS with mm-hmm. a global shutter. It's just that you don't find those. So what's the difference between a global shutter and a rolling shutter?
Well, a rolling shutter to me, first thing I thought about was a copier or a scanner
mm-hmm.
where the image sensor, you put the document on the screen, you close the lid, and you tell it to go ahead and make a copy or make a scan of it. And the image sensor travels down the length of the document from the top to the bottom or,
right.
However
left
you put
to
it
right
on there.
Or whatever, yeah.
Exactly. And it is going, it's starting at a specific point and capturing the entire document as it travels the length of it. And, because it's going essentially line by line. If you think about that in pixel terms, it's taking a row of pixels and then another row of pixels and then another, as it goes down.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking of it sort of the way television works.
Yes.
Where you have a line by line from the top to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
We'll ignore the interpolation part.
Right.
Otherwise
right.
we have to get really complicated. But anyway, the image is painted essentially on your screen from the top to the bottom mm-hmm. at a rate that's so fast that your eye does not detect that. It looks like it's all simultaneously projected to you. But it's actually done line by line from the top of the screen to the bottom of the screen. Same thing with a rolling shutter. So when you take a photo or you're using a camcorder, let's stick with camcorders.
Sure.
If you're using a camcorder that has a rolling shutter type of image sensor, so we're talking CMOS, the image is being recorded from the top to the bottom over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with a CCD camera, it's a global shutter, which means that it's capturing all that data all at once.
Yes, sort of like film would.
Yeah, so it's not something that's going to be scrolling. It's all one image. So this means that the two different types of image sensors are also prone to two different kinds of flaws that can happen when you're using them.
Well, of course. I mean, that's like any other types of technology. Not everything is suited for every use.
Right. So let's say that I'll talk about the different flaws that you can find.
Okay.
CCD essentially has one type of flaw that you can encounter, which is called the smear effect.
Ah, yes.
So smearing is, let's say that you've got you're taking an image of something that has a bright light in it.
Mm-hmm.
Smearing is this effect where you sort of see the light, you'll see like a projection of light above and below it, or
mm-hmm.
That's why it's called smear. It's been extended beyond just the source of light itself. It's kind of like a halo effect. Though usually it's more of a, at least in the samples I've looked at, it's more of a vertical thing where it looks like, it's almost like a ray of light that goes straight up and down the screen from the source.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's one of the things that CCD image sensors can fall victim to, but not, CMOS. And it's all because that global shutter exposes that image, the whole image simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
and it's all gathering that light. And once the predetermined shutter speed for that global shutter has elapsed, it stops gathering light, turns that entire exposure into an electronic image, and then starts again. And the rolling shutter just doesn't have that same effect, so the smear does not happen mm-hmm. with that. And it's very noticeable. If you see the effects of this, you'd think, oh, well, that's unfortunate that there's this weird shaft of light right there in the middle of the mm-hmm. of the frame. Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for the CCD. Okay. That's the one flaw that CCD image sensors can fall victim to.
The one known thing that people complain about.
The one thing that people complain about.
Right.
There are three different ones for CMOS.
Mm-hmm.
The first is called skew.
Okay.
Okay, so you've got this rolling shutter, and it's going from top to bottom as it's recording images. Now, this shutter is going off multiple times per second.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that you are panning the camera very, very quickly from one side to another, so you're changing the view. Well, you're having a rolling shutter and you're panning the camera, this can cause the idea of skew.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
So let's say that you have something that's significant, you know, a big thing that's in the frame of the photo, maybe like a tower.
Okay.
All right. So you've got a tower in the frame of your image and you quickly pan from left to right. Well, as you're panning, that shutter is rolling, and if your pan is fast enough, then the shutter is actually going to start building an image where the pixels at the top of the image are further on one side than the pixels that are at the bottom of that image.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not capturing all that data simultaneously. The outcome of that is that you get a skewed image when the output image itself is skewed. Mm-hmm. So that tower, which might be perfectly straight when you look at it, when you start looking back at the video and you're playing it back really slowly, mm-hmm. it suddenly looks like it's leaning or it's diagonal. It's like, it's suddenly not true anymore.
Now I understand what's wrong with all those vacation pictures I took in Pisa.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It's not it at all. But anyway, that effect is because of that rolling shutter.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a global shutter would not have that problem because it's taking all that image, it's taking all the information all at once.
Right.
The rolling shutter is taking it bit by, line by line. And again, it's only if you're panning very quickly because this is going so many times per second that if you're doing a nice slow pan, it's not noticeable.
Also, you're more likely to prevent the kind of nausea that's associated with the quick panning effect.
Yeah. We'll get to more.
So there's
of
an
that.
Advantage, a human advantage to that too.
Next is the wobble.
Yes.
So
Weebles don't have this problem.
No. This is
wobble, but
wobble is when you get sort of a weird stretchy or rubbery look to stuff that's going on in the video,
mm-hmm.
and it tends to happen with handheld footage.
Right?
Because when you're holding the camera, you don't have that steady base that you would if you're using a tripod. So let's say like a found footage film,
mm-hmm.
which are becoming more and more popular these days.
Sure.
So something like along the lines of Blair Witch or Cloverfield or one of those movies.
One of those movies.
Or VHS made by friends of mine. Check it out. It just premiered over at Sundance. That's a shout out to my buddies. Anyway, so same sort of thing. It's because of that rolling shutter, the information's being captured line by line. If your camera's not steady, then and if it's moving around quite a bit and at a fairly fast pace, then the images are not going to be clear. They're mm-hmm. going to end up having this wobbly, stretchy look. So let's say you're panning down. So you're looking at the top of that tower,
mm-hmm.
and you start panning down very, very quickly to say simulate a fall.
Okay.
So we're panning down very, very quickly. That rolling shutter is going up from the top to the bottom very quickly. As you are going down, the shutter is going to, if you're matching the shutter speed or getting close to the shutter speed, it's going to make that building stretch out.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to look very odd. And so that's another one of those issues. And again, the global shutter doesn't have that problem because it's not capturing information the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, there's partial exposure. Partial exposure happens when light is hitting the shutter or the image sensor at a very particular moment, and the light is hitting it just fast enough so that when the rolling shutter starts, the light's not there. But before the rolling shutter has finished its journey across the image sensor, the light has come and gone. Which means that part of your image is going to be much brighter than the rest of your image.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about your image as, let's say you're taking a picture of, say, a poster.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're looking at a poster and there's a flash that goes off as you are taking your image. And the flash is moving at a speed. It's a very quick flash. It's moving at a speed that's faster than the rolling, shutter is.
Mm-hmm.
When you actually look at that picture, when you're looking at the poster in the back, it's going to look like there's this one band of the poster that's much more brightly lit than the rest of the poster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the moment when that flash hit the image sensor as the rolling shutter was going down the sensor.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another issue. You have to work with your lighting in order to avoid it. And, if you're using a flash that's a longer-based flash, you don't have to worry as much. This is why, partially why anyway, part of it is because it's most of the smartphone flashes are LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also part of why if you ever take a photo with a smartphone that uses an LED flash, it tends to last a while. It's because if it didn't, then all your images would come out with this weird banding issue.
Right.
And you don't want bands in your pictures unless you're at a concert. I'll be taking some tonight.
Awesome.
I'm going to go see They Might Be Giants.
And that's a shout out to They Might Be Giants.
Yeah, everyone's getting shout outs today.
Apparently so.
It's free plug day on Tech Stuff.
Well, you know, a lot of stuff on Tech Stuff requires a plug.
Yes, it's true. Not everything's battery operated. So, the CCD is only prone to the smear issue, whereas CMOS has those other three.
Mm-hmm. Decent camera, you shouldn't have, you know, and are taking precautions, you shouldn't
yes.
have to worry about it.
Exactly. Yeah. If you know what you're doing, you can get around these problems.
Yeah.
It's just that these are the ones that the cameras are prone to based upon the technology they use.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that every single image you're going to take, or even like a significant percentage of the images you'll take will have problems associated with these issues that I've talked about. But some of them might.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they have those is because of the technology itself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, you just little basic tricks that you can do, you know, just for example, using a tripod whenever you can helps a lot.
Yeah.
It'll really remove a lot of this. Also, you know, most people aren't running around and jerking the camera left and right so fast that these are really coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using Instagram, really, you've made your image look so crappy already, you don't need to worry about these effects.
Nice.
That's just a joke, mostly.
All right.
My wife uses Instagram.
Oh, I see.
A lot. What a lovely old-timey photo of the space shuttle. I'm so glad. Anyway.
Which is better? Yeah. It really does depend on what kind of photography you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, probably the biggest difference is whether you're doing still photography or video.
Yeah. And most of the time when you're shopping for cameras, the type of sensor that's in it is not necessarily the easiest information for you to find out.
Yeah.
Although it does pay to look into that if you can and actually do some research on the sensor itself, because like we said, the sensor and the lens of the camera
mm-hmm.
is going to have a lot more to do with the quality of the images that you get using that camera than how many megapixels it has.
Yeah.
So even if you go out there and you buy a 12 megapixel camera and your buddy has an 8 megapixel camera, your buddy's images may look sharper and more vibrant than yours. Again, not to do with the megapixels. It's more about the lens and the sensor.
Yeah. And of course, if you're planning on dropping a lot of coin on a new camera, it probably would be a good idea if you read some reviews from professionals to give
yes.
you an idea of what to expect and to see if other people are using it the same way you will be, to really get an idea of how, you know, whether it's going to suit your needs, and that's the most important thing.
Very good. Yes, good advice from Mr. Paulette. I think we should probably wrap this up because our guest producer, Liz, is out there, and she's a photographer, and she's probably about ready to explode with all the information we've given and say, well, actually...
Well, she hasn't screamed at us yet.
No, so. I know, but I've seen like a couple of things fly at us through the curtain, so she's just not... Luckily, she throws like a girl. So,
ooh.
I'm just kidding. Actually, she could probably beat me. Oh, I'm hearing noises now. I take that back. Girls throw really hard, which is harder than I can anyway. So let's wrap this up while I shove my foot further into my mouth. If you guys have any comments or questions or suggestions for us, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, or send us an email. Our address is TechStuff@discovery.com, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything.
You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.